It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. While physical schools have been closed this spring, school has been in session on Talk of Iowa. We've been having biology classes on Tuesdays and Iowa history class on Thursdays. This is the last week of school here on Iowa Public Radio. On Thursday, we'll learn about the people who lived on the land that became Iowa before settlement. And starting next week, you can join us every Tuesday for Talk of Iowa Summer Camp. We're going to kick off camp season with astronomy camp next Tuesday. But today, for our final biology class, we're going to learn about the native ecosystems of Iowa. When settlers first came to this land, 85% of the state was covered with tall grass prairie, an ocean of grasses and flowers as far as the eye could see in many places. Of course, there were also woodlands and wetlands. Heidi Anderson is a naturalist with the Polk County Conservation Board. She is with us today. Hello, Heidi.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Dan Cohen is also with us, Executive Director of Buchanan County Conservation Board. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Charity. Happy to be with you today.
Well, thank you both for coming today. And we're going to work our way through the native ecosystems of Iowa, but I think we have to start with the tall grass prairie, the dominant ecosystem of our state. And Heidi, let's start with you. As I said, many people have speculated that there is at least evidence that 85% of the land in Iowa was covered with tall grass prairie. Is there any way to put that in perspective for us? Because that's just so much.
Yeah, it is really hard to imagine what Iowa would have looked like at that time, because so little of that tall grass prairie habitat still can be found. So it's so hard to visualize that. But, you know, Iowa is kind of in a geographic transitional zone between the eastern deciduous forests that are found typically in the states to the east and south of us, and between that and the prairies that typically dominate the western states. So we have mostly tall grass prairie habitat here, but like you said, we also had woodlands and wetlands dotted amongst that tall grass prairie habitat. Unfortunately, less than 1%, one-tenth of 1% of that prairie can still be found in the state.
I think a lot of students have probably gone on field trips to see either prairie remnants or, more likely, reconstructed prairie, because there was so little of that original prairie left. So a lot of people in Iowa have seen prairie, at least some of it. But Dan, can you describe for us what maybe the settlers would have encountered, or the native people who lived on this land before settlement would have seen or experienced with these grasslands?
Sure. You know, if we're talking about some of our earliest settlers or people coming into Iowa, this was something that was, you know, new to them. There was really no comparison in the eastern states of this great vast ocean of prairie. But it wasn't even just prairie. It was dotted with consumed with lots of wetland areas, very wet areas through much of the prairie pothole region of north central Iowa. And wetlands scattered throughout. So travel through this was a very difficult thing for early settlers during the period of westward expansion. The Native Americans, of course, had lived on this landscape for some time and had really adapted to it and really learned to control prairie with fire. And so they were some of the first land managers on this prairie landscape, using fire to change vegetation in a way that would bring in more game, to clear areas, and also to perpetuate more prairie, because prairie is dependent on having open areas, usually cleared through fire. So, you know, the great expanse of it and life on the prairie was very different for people at that period who are more used to woodlands. As Heidi was stating, and as you had brought up, to visualize it is difficult. One thing I would do is take kids on field trips and adults, and, you know, have them look at the small, you know, 10-acre, 15, 20-acre prairie, and with their imaginations try to erase the whole landscape as far as the eye could see, and take out the buildings, take out some of the wooded areas, and just imagine that just going on, and how daunting that would have been to our first settlers as they came into Iowa.
Well, and of course, the prairie changes throughout the different seasons, and we can talk a little bit about that. But at its peak, at its pinnacle in the summer months, those prairie grasses and the different plants like a cup plant can be so tall, well over 6 feet tall. So they're taller than humans. And again, as you said, this can go on for as far as the eye can see. The land was pitted with wetlands that you couldn't see before you got to them. So I can just imagine that if you were traveling on a wagon train, that it would be so easy for that wagon to just fall into one of these wetland areas as you're trying to cross this terrain. But also, if you tried to walk through the grasslands, you know, that's a place where you think about walking through a meadow, you think it would be very difficult to get lost. But I can imagine that it was dangerous, too, because you actually couldn't see what was around you. Right, Heidi?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The tall grass prairie plants are, you know, 6 to 8 feet tall in some locations. And, you know, most of us aren't 6 feet tall. So it's not like you could see over that grass. And so, but the typical dominant tall grass plant in the prairie is big blue stem and Indian grass. And they not only are extremely tall, but their roots underground go extremely deep, which is one of the reasons why fire can roll through the prairie, and it doesn't harm the prairie plants because their roots are still living underground, and the fire kills off the dead grass above ground, and then they just sprout and continue to grow. So those grasses are incredibly tall to walk through, and then the soil underneath. If you're reaching into those wet pothole areas, I've walked through lots of wetlands, and it's tough to walk through, and it's also kind of smelly. As plant matter decomposes and decays, it just it's kind of rotting there in that water, and as you stir up that sediment and that organic matter, it's quite odorous. And so when we take kids out into the wetland, that's one thing that, you know, they're losing shoes and they're commenting about, oh, it stinks out here. And, you know, just imagine, you know, trying to, you know, travel through that type of a landscape. It would have been very difficult and not fun at all.
And you talked about the roots of these plants. Let's talk about tap roots, because, of course, there's so much to a prairie that we can't see. And I know some kids, when they visit a prairie, maybe feel a little underwhelmed, especially if they go when the grasses are just coming up, or maybe it's later in the year when things have sort of settled down a little bit. It's a beautiful landscape, but it's not mountains, it's not oceans, it's not the kind of landscape that necessarily hits you in the face, but there's so much going on underneath the land. Heidi, can you explain how long a taproot might be and just how much mass there is to it?
Yeah, those roots from these prairie grasses can extend, you know, up to 20 feet down into the soil. So, you know, that is why they can withstand dry periods when we do have drought. You know, those roots are reaching so far down into the soil to reach moisture that they can typically thrive and do well in times of drought. But those extensive mass root systems also help hold the soil in place. And so when we remove that prairie habitat from the landscape, we're exposing that soil to a greater amount of erosion that can occur in heavy rain events and things like that. Just imagine a thick mat of grass, of roots underneath the soil that are just in a tangled weave of roots.
Well, and we often give the glaciers credit for our amazing soil in Iowa, and the glaciers do get credit for the incredible fertile soil of Iowa. But the thousands of years that the prairie was on this land also gets credit for creating this incredibly fertile soil, right, Heidi?
Yes, as those plants decompose over time, they are enriching that or adding organic matter to the soil, and so it created this thick line of topsoil on top of the bedrock in the state. And so, yeah, that thick black dark soil we have thanks to the prairie grass ecosystem.
And Dan, we were talking about some of the dominant grasses in a tall grass prairie, Indian grass or big blue stem, but there are so many different kinds of plants that thrive in the tall grass prairie, as well as animals that were native to the prairie, and so many insects as well. We have just about a minute before the break, but can you help me understand really the incredible biodiversity of this landscape?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we talked earlier about the prairies being a barrier or a tough thing for settlers to come through, but as an ecosystem itself, it's extremely diverse. And as you walked across Iowa, you would or traveled across Iowa, you would have seen many different types of prairie, the tallgrass prairie being the most dominant. But you had sand prairies, you had goat prairies, you've got areas with smaller grasses. You have all kinds of tunneling mammals and insects abound. Bird life was throughout, a very diverse, complex system, and the different roles that these animals played on the landscape in perpetuating the prairie. You could do a whole hour show on how bison and small mammals and insects all created the prairie into some degree by their activities.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about the native ecosystems of Iowa. So far, we've been talking about the tall grass prairie, but we'll also talk about forests and wetlands as well. Heidi Anderson is here, a naturalist with Polk County Conservation Board. Dan Cohen, executive director of Buchanan County Conservation Board. And we'd love to hear from you. Where are your favorite places to explore Iowa's native ecosystems? Give us some great tips or ask questions. 866-780-9000. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. School is in session on Talk of Iowa. It's our final biology class of the school year today. We'll have another history class on Thursday when we learn about the people who lived on this land before settlement in Iowa. And for the summer months, we're going to have Talk of Iowa Summer Camp every Tuesday at 10 a.m., so I hope you'll be with us for that as well. Today, we are learning about the native ecosystems of Iowa. We've been talking mostly about the tall grass prairie so far, but we will talk about forests and wetlands, and we'd love to hear from you. What are your questions? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And if you have a hidden gem that you just love to explore, maybe a little remnant prairie somewhere that you really love to visit, share your secrets with us. You can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I know a lot of people have been spending a lot of time outside exploring, and I hope people continue to do that. So we'd love to hear about some of the great places to go in Iowa. With me this hour, Dan Cohen, executive director of Buchanan County Conservation Board. Heidi Anderson is a naturalist with the Polk County Conservation Board. And as we talk about the tall grass prairie, as I mentioned, there are some remnants of original prairie or virgin prairie that remain in the state of Iowa, Dan. And then there are a lot of acres of reconstructed prairie, places where people have intentionally tried to recreate this landscape. Dan, do you have a favorite virgin prairie or prairie remnant that you like to visit?
Oh, yes, there's quite a few. Just locally in Buchanan County, we've got a wonderful area called the Bearbauer Sand Prairie, which is very unique in Buchanan County. Little sand knobs that contain rare and even a few endangered species on it. And this particular remnant, within 10 acres, goes from having a cactus called fragile prickly pear, a very rare cactus, to having cattails on the same parcel. Very diverse area, and it's kind of indicative of some of these prairie remnants. They're small. They're off the beaten path. You can't just drive down Interstate 80 and pick out the Virgin Prairies. They're usually tucked away, and use the term hidden gem, which is one that I use a lot to describe a lot of these really unique Iowa natural features.
Well, and of course, a lot of those prairie remnants are on places or in places where agriculture just really wasn't convenient. That's why they remained, right?
That's correct. Yep. So these dry sand knobs for the sand prairies, these wet prairie areas. Iowa has quite a few fens, which are a type of wetland, but they also typically have a lot of prairie plants on them. Places too wet, too dry, maybe too difficult for other regions. You know, if you go out to the east coast of Iowa along the Big Bluffs, you can find vertical goat prairies, which obviously couldn't have been farmed. So, yeah, a lot of these remnants are those kind of places.
Now, with people trying to reconstruct prairie, what would you say the difference is between a remnant prairie and a reconstructed prairie?
Well, quite a bit. You know, reconstructed prairies have come a long way since I was started getting involved with them in the mid-1980s. When at that time, you know, you had a few grasses and a few flowers, and you called it a reconstructed prairie. Today, that list has grown to, you might have, you know, 100 species in a reconstructed prairie, which is great. But a native prairie brings with it all the history, the genetic history of that prairie going back in time. And so you've got seed beds in there that might go back hundreds and hundreds of years with new kinds of plants popping up from time to time, and usually a greater diversity than what's created in a reconstructed prairie. But as I say, the reconstructed prairies are very important. They provide that prairie habitat that we could not provide with, as Heidi mentioned, a mere 0.1% of the landscape. So these reconstructed prairies have been extremely valuable for providing prairie and prairie habitat and upland bird habitat, too.
So do you think that there are species of plant that exist in these remnant prairies that maybe we don't even know about?
That's hard to say. I mean, there's been a lot of study of the prairie in recent years. I would think that we've chronicled probably most of the species that exist currently in the state, but we do find from time to time a species that we did not realize was still around or one that we didn't think existed in Iowa, and that's always exciting.
And it's impossible to know how many species may have gone extinct with this landscape being so incredibly altered, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's also important to know the quickness of the obliteration of the prairie. You're talking about a few decades and nearly all the prairie was gone. So you know, if you think about the deforestation of the rainforests or other places where we see really quick removal of natural features, but the prairie was probably set a record for how quickly such a vast landscape of diversity was altered. In the rush, we really might not know all the species that were impacted.
Heidi, do you have any favorite, and you can include reconstructed prairies in this as well, do you have favorite places? I know you're in Polk County to visit prairie landscapes.
Yes, one of my favorite places to visit is Chautauqua Bottoms Greenbelt. It's located in the northeast corner of Polk County, and it covers 9,000 acres in the corner of Polk County, and most of it is reconstructed prairie, but we do have some little pockets of native remnants within that, and one of my favorite spots to visit in Chautauqua complex is Engeldinger Marsh. It is a native prairie pothole that Highway 65 went smack dab right through the middle of, built there years ago. And so it's fairly accessible to get to, but there's some some native sedge plants there that are growing in this really wet soil that are fairly rare in this area. And so it's a great location. There's this huge little knoll just south of the marsh there where you can see for miles in any direction. And so it's scenic and lots of wildlife activity at Engeldinger Marsh.
If you were to visit a prairie landscape, what do you think the best way to really experience that is?
That's a good question. Well, for starters, I'm going to wear pants and boots to walk through the prairie with these tall grasses. Walking through a prairie with shorts on and sandals is not really a good way to go explore. So,
especially in tick season.
Yes, exactly. And yes, there are ticks out there, and folks, ticks are down in the grasses. They're not dropping down from trees and places like that. So, but yeah, I do enjoy walking through some prairies that have some kind of pre-made trails already mowed through there. But if not, still just hiking through and looking at what types of bird life or just even flowers might be blooming. And flowers bloom at all different times of the season. So walking through the same prairie in the month of May, you will see different things then than you would if you walked through the prairie in the month of August. And so it changes throughout the season. And particularly in the fall is kind of when the prairie grasses really turn this golden color, and they're absolutely beautiful because they're at their full height, and the grasses are going to seed, and so the seed heads are on the top of the grasses, and it's easier to identify what the grasses are. So, but any time it is a treasure because you'll always get to see something different.
And the way that the prairie changes through the season, I think, is kind of a surprise to some people. You mentioned that fall color, Heidi, and I think, you know, we think about fall color with trees. I don't think we think about it so much with grasses.
No, absolutely not. And you know, some people look at a prairie as that's just a weedy field. You know, it's if you're not familiar with the diversity or just what's actually out there, it's easy to kind of just write it off as not really an area worth exploring. But it really truly is a fascinating habitat, and there's so much going on within a prairie. And, you know, a lot of animals in the prairie live underground, and so you can't always tell what's out there just by looking at it from afar, but walking through, sometimes you're uncovering badger holes or, you know, pocket gopher mounds or, you know, a little pile of eggs from you know, pheasant eggs. You know, you just never know what you might uncover.
Now, some of the most charismatic creatures that used to live in the prairie are no longer found in the prairies of Iowa, at least in most of the prairies of Iowa. Dan, you mentioned bison earlier, and of course, bison were a big part of this landscape. There were just so many of them in the Great Plains and in the Iowa area in the prairie region. Prairie chickens are another one where I think we have prairie chickens in two different places in Iowa now, but they used to be extremely common in Iowa. And so many of the creatures that lived in this landscape really can't be found or aren't commonly found in the landscape anymore. Right, Dan?
Right. And there's the special challenges. You know, there's been a lot of interest in upland birds especially that have suffered due to the loss of these kind of habitats. But the bison and elk actually were more populous in most of Iowa than the bison were. But even today, these remnants and these reconstructed prairies provide incredibly important habitat for creatures of all types, from these upland birds and also to the butterfly populations, many different types of insects, some of these other small mammals. There's just incredible diversity, and this habitat type was one that was really needing to be restored and protected.
You mentioned fire earlier as well. Why do we burn prairies?
The prairie landscape is adapted to fire. Heidi touched on it quite a bit with the longer, more vast root systems that store the energy for the prairie. But the species that invade the prairie are typically either the non-native grasses and flowers, which are much more shallow rooted and are not adapted to fire. And then you've got brushy, more woodland type species that are constantly trying to fight that battle to invade into the prairies. And these periodic fires hold back the woody invaders. They eliminate some of the non-native plants, and at the same time, they remove that kind of that thatch and restore some of that back to the soil and trigger a new response of growth in the prairie. And so periodic fire is extremely important and part of that prairie landscape.
And of course, that was something that used to happen naturally with a lightning strike, but now we tend to do it on purpose.
Correct. And let's not forget that for many hundreds of years, the Native American populations were using fire in this way, too. So when settlers first saw these vast prairies, it's hard to really know, that existence of these vast and numerous prairies, if it was all through natural fire or to what degree it was Native Americans purposely managing these timbers, these prairies in this manner.
We've been talking about tall grass prairie, and as we transition into woodlands, Heidi, I want to talk about the oak savanna landscape. Of course, we know that the bur oak is the state tree of Iowa. It is one that we treasure here in the state. It's a part of our native landscape. But tell me a little bit about how the oaks would have interacted with the prairies.
Sure. The oak savanna is kind of a transition zone between a forested area and the tall grass prairie. And so these oak trees were able to withstand that fire that happened occasionally. So their bark is super thick, and so the trees were not damaged by fire in any way. And so a lot of the undergrowth and smaller woody shrubs couldn't withstand that. So what you ended up have happening are these just large oak trees with a mix of grasses and prairie plants underneath. And so these oak tree limbs really had room to spread out, and so much more so than in a woodland where, light is a premium, so trees tend to grow straight up, where in a more open space in the savanna, those oak branches had room to spread out. And so oak savannas are really a gorgeous, they're just gorgeous trees because they look a little differently than they do when we see oak trees in the forest. But it's a fairly rare ecosystem. So you've got just this mix of woodland and grassland vegetation in one area.
Well, and in imagining what it was like before the landscape in Iowa was so altered, thinking about the early people who were here, I can imagine what an oasis an oak tree would have been for them in the tall grasslands.
Oh, absolutely. I know when I'm out on the prairie with a group of kids, I often tell kids, to imagine what it would have been like and notice how windy it is, and it's hot and it's sunny. And so if you're coming up upon the savanna, you've got shade and you can get out of the sun and maybe out of the wind a little bit. And so it would have been a nice, peaceful location.
There were many places we will talk. We're going to take a break here in a moment, but we'll talk about the forests of Iowa. But there was so much of Iowa where trees were really scarce, except for these occasional oaks. Right, Heidi?
Yes. Typically, we would find trees growing along our river corridors and areas where it's a little more wet. Trees need more moisture than prairies do, and so we tend to get a little more moisture and precipitation in eastern Iowa than we do in western Iowa. And so, typically there weren't a lot of trees just in places that we see some trees today.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the native ecosystems of Iowa today. So we've talked about the tall grass prairie and the oak savanna. Next up, we'll talk about woodlands and wetlands. With me today, Heidi Anderson, a naturalist with Polk County Conservation, and Dan Cohen, executive director of Buchanan County Conservation Board. And you're welcome to join the conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Send us your questions and your favorite hidden gems to explore as the summer goes on. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. School is in session this hour with our final biology class of the school year. With me, Dan Cohen, Executive Director of Buchanan County Conservation Board, and Heidi Anderson, a naturalist with Polk County Conservation Board. And we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We're talking about the native ecosystems of Iowa today. And we have this from John in Muscatine. He said he likes to visit the city of Muscatine's pollinator project. U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the Nature Conservancy has joined to create the Hauser Street Pollinator Park in Muscatine. It's reclaimed agriculture land around the city's transfer station and compost facility. It's 55 interior urban acres accessible by a mile and a half long biking and walking trail with parking at the Muscatine Off-Leash Dog Park. Two wetlands, 16 acres of wide open prairie planted, dotted with landscape plants throughout. That was established in 2017. And this is a question from Laura. She wants to know, with climate change, will grass prairies still be a good fit for Iowa as the climate changes, or will more tropical plants be better in the state? Dan, do you want to respond to that?
Boy, I think probably the predictions with climate change are going to be a kind of shifting of some of those boundary areas between the prairies and the forests, where the predictions for Iowa show more frequent large rain events, probably more moisture, might make some of those areas along those transition zones want to transition more to woodlands, and could be bringing up other species. One thing we're seeing with climate change, too, is invasive species from our south and east that are moving more into the state of Iowa and becoming more of a challenge throughout all of our ecosystems. So those might be a couple of the impacts of climate change. Of course, our river systems and our flooding and backwater systems are being impacted also by climate change. But as far as, you know, in the coming decades, the more recent decades, I don't think we'll see like plants from the tropics in Iowa, but we'll see that transition zones kind of moving. You know, it might be more challenging to manage some of those transition areas.
One of the things that we've learned about our native ecosystems is that through reconstruction, we can actually make ourselves more resilient in the face of climate change. Right, Dan?
That's correct. Yeah, we can try to mitigate now for some of those things that we're seeing changing in the future.
Heidi, let's talk about woodlands. You mentioned that the woodlands of Iowa tended to gather around our lakes and streams. We didn't have a ton of lakes. We still don't have a ton of lakes, although we have more than we used to because of man-made lakes in the state as well. But tell me a little bit about what the woodlands of Iowa would have looked like prior to settlement.
Sure. We would have seen quite a few woodlands in the eastern part of the state, particularly in northeast Iowa as well. And just like how there are, we find different prairie plants in maybe lowland areas versus high sandy areas, the same holds true in our forests. In our more upland forests that would have been, you know, on maybe south-facing slopes, on peaks, we would have had a mix of oak and hickory trees, versus some of the lowland areas, particularly along river corridors, we would have seen a mix of willows and cottonwoods. And so, you know, even amongst tree species, there's different moisture needs and thriving in different soil types and things like that. But primarily in eastern Iowa, that's where we would have seen the most amount of forested areas in the state.
And we wouldn't have seen a lot of evergreen trees, right? They would have been primarily deciduous.
Yes, that is correct. There are very few native pine trees in Iowa or evergreen trees. The eastern white pine is one. Of course, we've got some cedar trees, red cedar, white cedar trees as well. But even though many of us like to plant pine trees for windbreaks and things like that in our lawns, those are not native to Iowa. And while they would grow and do well here, but that's not what we would have seen here in the past.
When settlers came to Iowa, they cut down a lot of trees. There was a lot of demand for wood as people tried to build their homes and their lives. Dan, what can we know about the native woodlands of Iowa, given that most of the trees have probably been cut at some point?
Yeah, and actually, starting with the Native Americans and then early settlers, a lot of the forest was opened up. So it was opened up through burning again still, and Native Americans would have burnt and created clearings in the forest to generate more growth and more berry-producing plants and nut-producing plants. And then when settlers came through and started cutting a lot of the forest, we had more openings. And so a lot of the oak timbers that we see, that we encounter in our lifetimes are remnants of that clearing that happened for that period of time with Native Americans and also settlers. Oaks don't do well in shade, so areas that didn't have any kind of disruption or any kind of opening wouldn't have had these nice oak forests that later settlers and people in Iowa experienced. And so we typically today try to go through, and if we want to manage for oaks and hickories, we try to mimic some of that disruption with some small clearings or fire in the timber to try to regenerate that oak hickory timber. We did lose a lot of forest, though, that was, just habitat lost as people came through. Not to the extent of the native prairie, but still we had quite a bit of habitat loss also during that period.
Do you know of stands of native woodland in Iowa that you've visited, Dan?
Just recently, my wife and I went and hiked over at White Pine Hollow. We just touched on that white pines weren't very common in Iowa historically, but that's one of the few places where you can see an old growth stand of white pine, the largest stand of white pine native in Iowa. Really interesting there. Most of Iowa, though, it's pretty hard to find places that haven't had pasture or some kind of clearing to them. Even areas that you look at and you see, you know, these nice 200-year oaks were probably pastured or cleared at one time.
Right, 200 years ago is that's when the landscape was being dramatically altered, right?
That's right, yep, and those clearings were created. Another thing that was really important to the woodlands of that period was that there was, you know, by the turn of the late 19th century, deer were eliminated from our timbers, so you didn't have that aspect of the foraging of deer in our timbers, which also changed things. And then starting in the mid-1900s, deer returning to the landscape also had ramifications for our timber.
Well, and it's interesting. I think our expectations for what a timber should look like sometimes doesn't take into effect, into account the native creatures that would have lived there. I've heard a lot of people complain about over-browsing in timbers, which can be a real problem with a very high deer population. But there should be some browsing, right?
Sure. Yep. The woodland, like the prairie, is an ecosystem of interrelated activities of animals and plants. And, yes, there's definitely some browsing animals doing their thing. There are pollinators that are needed in the timber, just as they are in grasses and wildflowers. They all work together to create the mosaic of a forest that we see when we go out there.
Heidi, you mentioned some of the stinky, mucky parts of the prairie in Iowa. If you mm-hmm. walk through a prairie ecosystem, there were a lot of those in Iowa. Dan mentioned earlier the prairie pothole region, and that's in the northern part of the state where there were all of these little wetlands that just dotted the land. But we don't think of Iowa as a real wetland state, but that's part of how we altered the land, right? We tried to do away with all of those wetlands because they weren't good for farming, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Most of those wetlands, those prairie potholes, were drained so that the land could be farmed. And if you were to drive north on I-35 north of Des Moines, you can see where most of those prairie potholes originally were. After heavy rains like we've had recently, and there's water standing in the fields, those soils are, you know, while we're doing our best to drain that water off the landscape, it still collects. And we can imagine a little bit as to, oh, how many of those little prairie pothole wetlands there actually were on the landscape. But, you know, those wetlands were just like, they're like sponges on the landscape. And so they kind of soak up that excess water in times of wet periods, and then it slowly releases that water back into the landscape in dry periods as well. So that the soil conditions still exist in the state. We've altered them as much as we can to make that land farmable.
And of course, that's a battle that our farmers have been fighting for hundreds of years, really.
Absolutely.
Here in Iowa. And we have learned a lot about those landscapes. Some people have worked hard to restore those landscapes because we have learned about some of the really incredible benefits of those little wetlands. What do we know about wetlands now that we wouldn't have known 150 years ago?
Well, we know, like I was mentioning, that they're sponges, so they're incredibly important for not only filtering the water before it goes either down into the water table or into a nearby creek, but in times of we're experiencing more and more heavy rain events, and flooding is occurring more and more often. And those wetlands would have been great on the landscape to help slow down some of that runoff. And since we don't have those sponges there anymore to help keep the water in place, we're experiencing issues with more and more flooding. So, you know, we didn't know that back then. Didn't really understand their function. They were thought of as a very negative thing to have on the landscape. So now more and more wetlands are being added back. We're trying to reconstruct, just like we're reconstructing prairies. We're trying to reconstruct wetlands back onto the landscape to kind of gather and help hold some of that water excess sediment as it moves across the landscape.
And of course, it's not just draining wetlands that has caused all of this runoff. We've also put down a lot of concrete in the state of Iowa.
Yes,
and really
absolutely
changed the landscape that way as well. But we actually went through a process of making streams straighter because we wanted to get rid of all of that water. And Dan, I know that you've talked about how Iowa is really a land of creeks, rivers, and streams. Lots of these little wetlands, but also lots of these little waterways as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, I always think of Iowa as a land of rivers within, bordered by two of the most impressive rivers in the world. But the interior of Iowa with its landscapes has lots of different drainages that lead to creeks and streams and rivers and great places to explore, great areas of beauty. Again, there are places where they're best experienced if you get off the pavement and you find these wonderful places and get into a boat, get into a canoe, kayak, and experience these great rivers and streams we have.
And as Heidi was saying, we've learned that these Small wetlands are sponges. But we've also learned that about prairies as well. This is not just a sponge, a way to sort of soak up that water that falls, sometimes way too much of it, but it's also a filter. So these native landscapes can improve our water quality. Dan?
That's right. And if you think about all the different conservation practices that people put on the landscape today, whether it's through a CRP program or a block that somebody's planting or something that a municipality is doing, really what they're doing is creating small areas of what was once Iowa. So they're planting long-rooted prairie plants. They're creating new wetlands to act as holders of waters and filters of soil to hold soil on the landscape. These are the services that these natural communities provided historically. One thing I'd like to point out to people is when we think about Iowa as having been altered, one of the biggest alterations has been our hydrology. So we've gone from a state of prairies and forests and woodlands and wetlands where most of the water that fell on the landscape was slowed. Water was filtered to some degree, and water made its way mostly toward groundwater and then into our rivers and streams. And today, that's pretty much reversed, to where almost all the water that falls on the state is quickly shed off, either through surface runoff on concrete or farm fields or lawns, or through near-surface tile outlets, and quickly moved off into our rivers and streams. So we've kind of reversed that. But creating these small areas of what was once historic landscape is kind of the key to turning that around.
Well, and many people have embraced that in Iowa. We are seeing more and more landowners, whether they work in agriculture or whether they don't, embracing these native landscapes. And there's a lot of hope in that. Dan?
I agree, yeah. You had a caller earlier who mentioned a pollinator program where they were planting reconstructed prairie and pollinators along with wetlands. And again, that's kind of indicative. And we've had a lot of success with these pollinator programs through CRP and other programs that have really made a difference. And we're seeing some grassland birds really responding to that. I think many of us are seeing a lot more pheasants than we've seen in recent years. And there's some definite...
Although not a native species, but a welcome species in
right,
Iowa.
Not a native, but yeah, very much so.
Oh, well, we are out of time. Dan Cohen, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Dan Cohen, Executive Director of the Buchanan County Conservation Board. Heidi Anderson, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Heidi Anderson, a naturalist with the Polk County Conservation Board. You can find more information as well as some vocabulary words and discussion questions on our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can also find that post on our Facebook page as well. This is our final biology class of the 2019-2020 school year. Of course, we've only been doing this homeschooling for the last few weeks. This is the final week of school, but join us next Tuesday as we kick off the Talk of Iowa Summer Camp series with Astronomy Camp. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.